I don't know how many of you all read the Atlantic Monthly, but a number of years ago they celebrated their 150th anniversary, and to mark the occasion they printed a special edition, and they had about two dozen famous writers, thinkers, submit articles to them, and all of these articles had to do with the American idea, and then they published these in a special edition. But one of the articles was written by a man named Sam Harris. Sam Harris, you may be familiar with, he's part of a group which is called the New Atheists. This includes thinkers like Richard Dawkins. He has a book called The End of Faith, and as you can imagine, he is very anti-religious. But I want to read to you what Harris wrote in his article for this edition of the Atlantic Monthly. And this is kind of towards the end of his article. He says this: America is now a nation of 300 million souls, wielding more influence than any other people in human history. And yet, 240 million of these souls apparently believe that Jesus will return one day and orchestrate the end of the world with his magic powers. This hankering for a denominational spiritual oblivion is extremely silly, extremely dangerous, and extremely worthy of denigration. It is not a good bet, much less a useful idea. And then he continues, and he argues that because we are, as he says, God drunk, because we hold on to this antiquated idea among others, because of this, we are unable to play the role in the world that we could. And so he finishes by writing, "This must change. If the idea of America is to mean anything at all in the world, Americans have a moral responsibility to become citizens of the 21st century." And so what Sam Harris is saying is he's saying that we have a moral responsibility to abandon our belief in the second coming of Jesus so that we can become citizens of the 21st century. Now, as I read that, what I was thinking was that is not an easy thing for us to do, to give up on this belief. I mean, that would be like me asking Harris to give up on materialism, the idea that only matter matters. This belief in the second coming of Jesus, which we hold, this is very much near the core of who we are. Every Sunday, Christians around the world, they proclaim the mystery of faith, that Christ has died, Christ has risen, and that Christ will come again. It's a threefold mystery. In just a while, in the Eucharistic prayer, we will say, Christ has died, he has risen, he will come again. These are the three turning points in the cosmic story that we believe in. These are the three pillars that hold up our spiritual house. It's not optional, right? This belief in the second coming, it's in every creed of the church. And in fact, it's one of the great themes of the Advent season. As Malone said, today is the first Sunday in Advent. And in Advent, we gather to remind each other that we are anticipating a coming. Not the coming of the one in Bethlehem, but the coming of the one born in Bethlehem, now coming in full glory to judge the living and the dead. We are waiting for the end, the consummation of all things. Now, I will say I do understand why thinkers like Sam Harris struggle with the second coming, and that's because it is terribly hard to imagine. Terribly hard to imagine how this will all take place. It's like asking someone still in their mother's womb to imagine the beauty of the world. It's outside their experience. There's different ways to talk about the second coming of Jesus. C.S. Lewis, in his Mere Christianity, he talks about the great author of the world stepping on the stage, God coming among us without disguise. And he says, when he does come, it will be so overwhelming that it will strike either irresistible love or irresistible terror in every creature. The Apostle Paul says that when God comes without disguise, when he comes in glory, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that he is Lord. And the prophets, when the prophets imagine this coming, this final chapter, they talk of an earth where nations will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And nations will no longer take up the sword, and they will learn war no more. And then later, that same prophet, imagining the day, he says, I see a great banquet feast, and on this day, every tear will be wiped away, and the power of death will be no more. He says, the wolf and the lamb, they will eat together. The lion and the ox, they will eat hay together. This is the end. And while it is hard for us to imagine, it is definitely not spiritual oblivion, as Harris puts it. What we need to see is that this, as Christians, this is our deepest hope. A glorious end when all will be made well, when everything will be sorted out and be set right. Now, of course, we have this hope. We have this hope because the one born in Bethlehem said he would come again and bring this final shalom to the earth. And in fact, in our gospel reading today, he talks about it. We read from the Gospel of Mark, and our gospel reading is kind of confusing. It's part of a larger discourse. And in that discourse, Jesus is talking about two different events, and those two events show up in our passage as well. First, he's talking about his death and resurrection and the overthrow of the temple. That's where he's saying this will all happen in this generation. But then he's also talking about his second coming at the end of the age. And so I want to look at our last paragraph in our reading, because there he's talking about this, his coming again. This is what Jesus says to us. He begins by saying, but about that day or hour no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. No one knows. That's the first thing to see. You know, this central conviction that we have about Jesus' return. In one sense, we are so ignorant about it. We are so in the dark. No one knows. Not even the Son knows, Jesus says. Commentators argue that this has to be an authentic statement from Jesus. Has to be. And that's because no disciple of Jesus would dare say that there is something that the Christ is ignorant about. Not even the Son knows. Of course, that hasn't stopped the church from speculating. Countless preachers have said they have cracked the code, but truly, it's a pointless task. I mean, when the central character in the drama says he doesn't know the day or the hour, then it's pointless to assume he's hidden clues for us to figure out. I mean, if someone says that they don't know what's on the exam, you don't keep hoping he'll drop hints. And yet I understand this desire to figure it out. Because the next thing Jesus says is he says, keep alert. Keep awake. Be on the lookout. And so if we're going to keep alert, we're naturally going to want to try to figure out the details of this. But again, we're in the dark on this. Again, Jesus says, "Beware, keep alert, for you do not know the time when I will come." And Jesus then tells a parable. He says this, "It is like a man going on a journey. When he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch." And so Jesus, he tells us to be like that doorkeeper, right? Looking for the master. We are to be ready. Our anticipation for the return of Jesus is to shape our activity, our reality today, what we're doing. We are to be open to the advent of God. And I think we can say what this means is having a spiritual readiness that allows for the presence and reign of Christ in our daily lives. Keeping awake and alert. You know, keeping awake and alert to Jesus, it's something that we struggle with. We read from Mark's gospel, but in Matthew's gospel, you get very much the same teaching. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus, he says, no one knows the hour. He tells his disciples to keep alert. He gives a parable about servants being ready. But then Matthew gives this additional teaching from Jesus, which I think is helpful because here Jesus tells us why we struggle to stay awake and alert. This is what he says in Matthew's gospel. "About that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father." And this is where it is. "For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away, so too will be the coming of the Son of Man." So here Jesus says, "For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man." So what were the days of Noah like? And we might think, well, they were days of wickedness and sinfulness because that's how Genesis describes them. But what's interesting is here Jesus doesn't describe those days in terms of wickedness, but rather he describes them by their ordinariness. Right? He says, in those days they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage. They were doing the ordinary things of life. And so what Jesus is saying is that in these days, men and women, they were defining their lives by the ordinary. They begin to think that the only thing that really matters in life is eating and drinking, marrying and being given in marriage, getting and spending. And they forgot, therefore, about the larger cosmic story that they were a part of. And you see, so often that is us. We eat and we drink. We're married and are given in marriage. We work and we sleep. We get and we spend. And the danger is that we get lulled by the ordinariness of life. We start to define ourselves by the itsy-bitsy story of our daily life. To make eating and drinking, marrying and getting married, we make that the content of our lives. And when that happens, what we do is we look at the Noahs of the world. The Noahs who are building an ark when it's not even raining. And we think, geez, that is crazy. That's nuts. That is not a good bet, much less a useful idea, as Sam Harris says. And so we have to be careful not to be lulled by the ordinary. We have to stay awake, as Jesus says. Stay awake to the story, the larger story of God. This season of Advent, it is so important for us to remember that we are shaped by our great anticipation, that we are people who celebrate that Christ is both here and that Christ is coming, and that we are to live our lives in the light of his coming, because this is the mystery of our faith, the wonder of it, that Christ has died, Christ has risen, and Christ will come again. These are the three things that shape our identity, that create the reality in which you and I live. Amen.